Welcome to the Incession Film Podcast for December 9th, 2013. This is episode 42, and I'm J.D. Duran.
And I'm Scott Pollard.
And this is Drew Koenig.
And this week on the show, we have Drew Koenig, who is back on the show for his second time. Thanks for being here, Drew.
It's good to be here.
And on this week's show, we're going to be reviewing the latest film, Out of the Furnace. And going off of that, we're going to do our top three family revenge movies, in the sense that the revenge plot had to do with family on some sort of level. And for a third segment, we're going to do a December preview, which, oh my gosh, that's going to be crazy. I feel like this is going to be a great month for movies, in my opinion, and at least I'm hoping for it anyway. And
same here.
Yeah. And then to finish off the show, we'll talk about some of the latest movie news and films we got to see over the last week. But before we get into it, fellas, how was your week?
My week was pretty good. I spent the last week moving into my new apartment in Cincinnati, and I don't even have internet right now. So
very nice.
Very interesting week for sure with the weather, man. I'm surprised you got it all done.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure.
How was your week, Scott?
Pretty good, man. It was, getting closer to Christmas, so you got to avoid those crazy shoppers, even though Black Friday's over. You know, still trying to avoid the crazies out there, so that's kind of what I've been doing. What about you, man?
I had a fantastic week. I feel like this last week has lasted about 3 months worth. So much has happened. I had a good week at work, had a little bit of a short week. Friday, the fiance and I went down to Universal in Orlando. And we had an amazing time with her family and kind of spent Christmas with her family down there, which was awesome. And one of my favorite things in the world, and especially within the movie universe, and if you know the show and you know me, you know this, is I love Transformers. I know we'll talk about it later. But Universal has this Transformers 3D ride, which is one of the big reasons her family wanted to go there. They know that I love it. And so it was this huge thing. And it was worth every penny. The Transformers 3D ride is out of this world. It was so good. It was amazing. There's a lot of details that only I would appreciate, I feel like. But it was amazing. It was a lot of fun anyway. So I had a fantastic weekend. It was very good. And Ohio State lost, which made it even better.
And I bet it was worth their money to go with you just to see your reaction.
Oh, yeah. I know. I feel like, because it was when we first time we went, it was me, my fiance, and her parents. And I think the whole time they were just staring at me. Like, wow, what? He's loving it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I was extremely, extremely excited. So, and I got my pictures taken with Bumblebee and Optimus Prime, of course. I was like a 12-year-old kid.
Good. That's what it's all about, man.
Yeah. So it was good. We had a great time. It was a lot of fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I got some Optimus Prime and Bumblebee coffee mugs since I drink a lot of coffee. And so now I get to hang out with them all the time. It was good. Real quick, though, before we get going, that I just wanted to mention is we have a new contest going on right now on the website. And it's very easy. All we're asking for is reviews on iTunes. If you go and give us a review on iTunes, you'll be entered into a drawing to win 2 Blu-rays or DVDs of your choice. So it's very simple, very easy. Just go leave a review, any review. Could be negative or positive, hopefully a positive one. Won't affect whether you win or lose, but just go and do that, and we'll come up with a winner here in the next couple weeks. But could be a cool Christmas gift for you, so be sure to go and do that. But I think we're ready to get into it, fellas. Let's get into it.
And here we go.
Thank you. You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 42. Scott, out of the furnace, is blue-collar and gritty in every way possible, giving us a simple narrative.
But does a simple narrative work with the aesthetic and performances here? That's the question we'll have to answer.
You hear me, Petty? You better start following through on your promise. For 25 grand, you better control. I ought to put a piece of lead in your ass and take everything in.
John, you back here?
Oh, I'm sorry. Should I come back later?
No, it's okay. We're finishing up.
Your mom teach you to barge in my crap?
You got a problem with me?
I got a problem with everybody.
All right, Out of the Furnace is directed by Scott Cooper and stars Christian Bale, Casey Affleck, Zoe Saldana, Woody Harrelson, and a few other people as well. What did you guys think about Out of the Furnace?
I enjoyed Out of the Furnace. You know, it's a fine movie. They had really good performances throughout with Bale and Affleck and Harrelson. But beyond that, I mean, it didn't do a whole lot for me. You know, it's still a decent film, but what do you all think?
You know, I thought that going into this, I wasn't sure what I would think, really. The trailer kind of was like so-so, and I really wasn't sure what they were going after other than there's a basic revenge plot. And after watching it, I will say I think this is more of a movie for just the moviegoer that wants entertainment versus anything else, because I do think it's a very basic story, and I do think that there were great performances, as you said, Drew. So all in all, I think it's, you know, a good movie, but it's nothing spectacular. What did you think about it, JD?
Well, I think for me, one thing to just kind of throw out there, and I think is just kind of getting into the fundamentals of what we're getting into, because this movie worked really well for me, just to kind of throw that out front. And it is filled with incredible performances, as you guys have mentioned. But I think when you get down to this movie, I think it comes down to a little bit of your lifestyle, perhaps a little bit of your background, and really what you're wanting to get out of this movie and out of this film. Because it is very simple. On the surface, it's just a simple narrative, a simple revenge story. But to me, this does have layers going on as well. One of my favorite things, though, about this movie is what Scott Cooper was bringing in terms of the aesthetic. I absolutely love this aesthetic. It's kind of set in a small steel town, probably somewhere outside of Pittsburgh, and kind of in that area. And it's very raw. It's very very intimate. To me, it's very blue collar. That was one of the main words that I used in my review on the website at InSessionFilm.com. Is this is a movie that is very different to me in the sense that a lot of the pictures we get nowadays are nothing but big budget, big worlds, or it's films with characters that have more money than I would ever know what to do with. And to me, this is set in a setting that I personally am very familiar with and something that I can really appreciate. Outside of the revenge elements and outside of a lot of what Christian Bale's character does in the third act, or even outside the kind of twist of fate, you can say that kind of happens with Christian Bale's character. Outside of those moments, and just in terms of what kind of person Christian Bale's character is, he's very much like my dad. And I saw a lot of that comparison when I was watching this movie. Is he's someone that's very simple. He works for a living. And I mean, he works and like physically goes to the mill, does hard labor, does a job that a lot of us realistically and honestly probably wouldn't ever want to do. And there's something to me that I appreciate that. There's something to me that gets to the blue collarness that we don't see in very many films. And even in these type of aesthetics, to me, there's usually something about these type of characters that the directors or the narratives want that person to become, like this big hero at the end, someone that the town can appreciate. And this was very different. I feel like Scott Cooper and even Brad Inglesby, who also wrote the script here, I feel like they had different things in mind, and they just kept it simple and kind of dark, which is okay. I don't think dark is necessarily means that it's arduous to watch, but I loved that simple aesthetic and that simple character writing. And for me, maybe I'm a little bit biased because I kind of grew up in some of this stuff, but to me, that worked really well.
Well, I thought a lot of the film was very atmospheric, and I still have that word stuck in my mind because I just saw Llewyn Davis the other day, but it's a very atmospheric film, you know? Not a whole lot happens throughout. You know, they're just scenes of Vale just sitting in a, you know, in his kitchen just staring at something. It kind of lets you get into the mood of the film, you know?
Yeah. Especially, I love how they set the mood at the very beginning with Woody Harrelson's character, as that scene to me is a little arduous to watch and it is a little bit difficult. But I feel like it really sets the tone for his character and where it's kind of go in terms of tone and in its rawness. And to me, I liked how that was set up.
You know, just to speak as far as the aesthetic goes, you were talking about, I definitely felt a lot of like Winter's Bone, even the Rudy, you know, a little bit of Rudy in there, where as far as where they work, and even some Place Beyond the Pines. So I think it was a, you know, I think the aesthetic here was more real life Americana right now than any movie recently. You know, I think in a time where we get The Great Gatsby and, you know, The Wolf of Wall Street and a lot of things that people just can't identify with as much, I think this one was more something, you know, I know we in Kentucky can definitely, we're not, you know, maybe not everybody in Kentucky's in rural areas like me, but there are a lot of people like this struggling and, you know, working these hard jobs and going to Iraq and stuff like that. So I definitely feel like there's something special about that, like you said, JD.
Yeah, and to me, I think that's just one of the big reasons I fell in love with this movie right away. And the music adds a good element to that as well. But you're right. I mean, there's lots of big pictures out there, and there's lots of big budgets, or, you know, movies like you just mentioned, like Gatsby or Wall Street and things like that. And nothing against those, because those movies are great too for what they are. But for me, I love that this is just small and rural, and it gives me a sense of hominess for me personally. And like I said, I saw a lot of my dad in Christian Bale's character. And I love that. I love that I was able to really connect with those characters on really personal levels. And so I liked that it took that approach. And then now another thing that I really loved what Scott Cooper was doing with this in keeping things simple. Another thing that I feel like a lot of movies do, especially nowadays, is that a lot of films, in terms of its narrative or in terms of its direction, will hammer home different plot points as if we have no idea what's going on. Thor the Dark World is a great example. There was one plot line in that they talked about like three different times, you know, just to make sure that you understand. And a lot of movies will do that as if we're stupid and won't get it. And I love Scott Cooper's decision here for the most part, where you have to assume things about this story. You got to assume things about these characters because they don't go into it a whole lot. To me, I think those assumptions are easy to do because the narrative is that simple and there's not really a whole lot going on. It's just very slow paced and it's very real life, especially in ruralness. Like you were saying, Scott, like if you're in nowhere, Kentucky, it's very easy to connect with these. And, you know, and I kind of grew up in a setting and an aesthetic that's very similar to that. So maybe I'm a little bit biased because of that. And maybe it'll come down to your personal connections. And like I was saying earlier, maybe the environment you grew up in, things like that. But I feel like when you get down to the fundamentals of this whole thing, it's that simpleness of the characters and the simpleness of the aesthetic, the slowing down of things comparatively to what we've seen lately. To me, that worked on top of the amazing performances we saw.
Well, I think what you all are saying, like comparing it to bigger movies, you know, like the instinct here is kind of to compare this to Taken, you know, which is an unfair comparison, but it's one that's there if you know the direction that the film's going in, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not fair to the movie, you know? if you have taken in your mind, and this is not taken at all.
No.
Sure.
Certainly not.
Yeah.
Like, if you love Taken, you're like, this film needs to pick up more, you know? We need to go, we need to go.
Sure. It is, it is a lot more slow-paced than something like that, which was okay for me. I mean, like I said, I think this was going for more of a sense of realism, where Taken is, it kind of goes back to the big worlds or the big budget things or just universes and worlds that none of us can relate with. And none of us are going to be Liam Neeson's character from that movie. As much as we'd like to think we can be, none of us are that. And so there's no sense of realism. Where here, it's so slow-paced, and you kind of, and especially with what happens with Bale's character, you see flaws right away. He's not a perfect person. And even with his home life, I mean, it's very kind of depressing in some ways. You can tell that they really have to work for a living. They don't have any money. There's none of that going on, and there's none of that even that they're trying to achieve, really. I think they're trying to keep it in the sense of reality, and especially with that aesthetic and how those kind of people live, which there's nothing wrong with it. But to me, I think that's where they were trying to keep this film. They weren't trying to keep it into a, oh, well, now we got to get it fast paced, and Bale's character's got to go do this, and we got to find out this plot point, and we got to do these things.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, they kept it in how it would really play out in reality if that was the case.
Yeah, two things about that. You know, as far as the Taken versus this or whatever, what more action, the slow pace of this movie, I think that the biggest thing about that is I feel like the director wanted to focus more on the environment and the aesthetic of this, you know, this world that he creates instead of the narrative as much at times. You know, like, we had a lot of tracking shots of, you know, way out in the woods or driving up a hill, middle of nowhere. I think it really got you into that setting more than anything else. And as far as the realism goes, you know, this is how a lot of Americans are living right now, you know, day to day, paycheck to paycheck. There's a moment where Christian Bale's character, you know, the guy says, oh, I heard they're going to close the mill or whatever. And he's like, yeah, you know, like, he really doesn't even want to think about it.
Because it'd be screwed. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he just doesn't want to, you know, that there's not a lot of facing reality sometimes because, you know, it's just too painful to for some people. And I think that it does hit a lot of realistic points in those areas, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with that. And I think another place where we get that is within the performances and in some of the characters itself. I mean, we've kind of touched on Christian Bale's character, but one other character I want to touch on is Casey Affleck, who is phenomenal here as Rodney, who is Christian Bale's brother in the movie. And this is a guy who's served in Iraq 4 different times and coming out on the other side of it has nothing to show for it. And as we've seen in other movies and probably in other people in real life, this is the only thing he knows. And so some of that gets him into some trouble. And because it's the only thing he knows, it ends up kind of being this huge plot device that they use to serve the story. But for me, even as a character, if you were to just really look at him and what's going on beneath the surface of this character, there's a lot more going on, and he's really working out of a lot of anger and a lot of pain, which really comes out in this one specific scene with Christian Bale's character. And they kind of have this argument in this fight that really sets that plot point going forward. But for me, it's those kind of moments and where those performances are really, really hammering it home and just doing a phenomenal job. And in the kind of simple narrative that they're working for, to me, it just kind of drives home that relationship in the reality that we've already been talking about. And that stuff to me is why this movie works.
Yeah, I think that, you know, even though Christian Bale's on the poster and he might be the lead actor in this movie, I feel like the brunt of the acting is done by Casey Affleck and Woody Harrelson, you know?
Yeah.
Not only is Affleck, like you said, you really believe that he was in Iraq and he's an army kind of guy. He does have that look anyway, but he did a great job in those scenes and a lot of intense acting going on there for him. And, you know, we just saw Woody Harrelson in The Hunger Games, and boy, this character couldn't be more different as far as, like, a meaner, nastier kind of guy, you know? And,
sure.
So I really loved his performance. I felt like Harrelson maybe one of his best that I've ever seen.
Oh yeah. That's exactly how I felt about it. And I kind of touched on that in my review as well. Like, I would love to see him in more roles like this, and maybe not necessarily as the villain. He doesn't have to play that, but just where he kind of gets to let himself go a little bit and really kind of gets down to the kind of raw intensity that this character has. That's what I loved about what Harrelson pulled off.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the only problems I had with the film as far as the acting went was I felt like Zoe Saldana, while she is very attractive and she does add an element to the film and to the narrative that may not have been there, as far as the interracial relationship in a rural area goes, I did feel like they kind of shoehorned that character in there, you know, in a way to get that plot point in that we won't spoil. But I just think that, like, maybe some of her stuff really wasn't that interesting, and, you know, it had more to do with Christian Bale than it had to do with anything else. So that was pretty weak for me. And I did think Forrest Whitaker, while he was really fun to see in this movie, I didn't think he did a lot. I don't think it's his fault. I just think they didn't have a lot for him to do, you know. So those kind of two were, I don't know, what do you think about Zoe Saldana? That's the main one that I'm hard on, I guess.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn about her because, you know, she did good with what she had, you know. But like you said, there's not a whole lot there, you know. I can't go either way on it, you know.
Yeah, I want to like her, but it's just so hard.
Yeah. I didn't mind it as much as you, Scott, but I will agree that her plot line maybe could have used a little bit more work. I agree. It kind of feels even a little bit unnecessary. But for me, I guess it works in the sense that they're trying to capture this as realistically as possible. And there's going to be areas of your life that you just can't ignore, or there's like big things going on in someone else's life. And for this story, this is something that was important to Christian Bale's character and something that ended up affecting him in some pretty hardcore ways, especially as the third act was really starting to begin. And it kind of helped push him a little bit towards what some of his actions ended up leading towards. But for me, it wasn't enough necessarily for her. And it was the same thing with Forrest Whitaker. I agree. He doesn't have a lot to do. Sam Shepard's character doesn't have a lot to do either. To me, I feel like they just bring in some of these supporting roles just to kind of capture some other different dimensions of this guy's life and some other dimensions of the story that's going on. And maybe they're not huge plot points, maybe a little bit unnecessary, but I don't feel like they necessarily dived into it a whole lot. And I don't know if they needed to. I feel like this is one of those cases where, because the narrative, they try to keep it as simple as possible. I feel like if they would have dove too much into this, it kind of would have been the same criticisms we had toward The Hunger Games if they would have went into that love story a little bit too much. So to me, it's along those same ballparks in terms of them getting it right. Now, I would agree with you a little bit more if there was more going on with the narrative, but because they kept everything simple, I feel like it was right in the vein of where it needed to be.
Yeah, also I wanted to say that Willem Dafoe as John Petty was really good, I thought.
Yeah,
I forgot. We can't not mention him, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and he plays a pretty key role as well, at least in the first act of the film, and especially with Casey Affleck's character and where that goes. Yeah, I mean, I thought he was fantastic too. I mean, he had some great interactions with Woody Harrelson's character and especially with Casey Affleck's character. I thought it was fantastic. I would agree.
Yeah, and I didn't even realize it was a Willem Dafoe after I saw the movie.
Oh,
I had no idea about that.
Yeah. I thought he was great. He was fantastic. Yeah. Well, another thing that kind of really works for me for this film, and this kind of goes back to the aesthetic, but this is a layer I definitely want to talk about, and that is the music. I think the music adds a really great layer and element to the aesthetic that we're getting. The score was done by Dixon Inchcliffe, but we also get some Eddie Vedder in here. And Eddie Vedder has done some other films before. He actually was nominated for an Oscar, I think, for his work for Into the Wild. So that is not a surprise, though, that we get the same kind of feel here with sort of similar aesthetics, I guess, and just outdoors and kind of rural areas. And for me, the music was amazing. I enjoyed it all the way through, and it definitely fit the tone of this movie, and it fit just kind of the ruralness and the blue collar aesthetic that we get. I thought it was really fantastic, and for me, added a good amount of stuff for the movie for me personally.
Yeah, and Hinkcliffe, you know, he did score some of Winter's Bone, so that makes sense that they would kind of go after him. You know?
Sure.
Same
sure.
kind of feeling. So, yeah, I agree. Yeah. It was great. Pearl Jam was good. So,
absolutely. Good stuff here. All right, well, any final thoughts, and what kind of a grade would you guys give Out of the Furnace?
I basically liked it, you know, more or less. But give it about a B-.
Yeah, I think that this is a good movie for most mainstream audiences and even film fans, because I feel like even though it's nothing spectacular and nothing truly, there's nothing that sets this apart from other, you know, movies of this type, movies of this stature, a little above average revenge movie. I do feel like it's really fun to see all these people in a movie like this, because we've been seeing them in so much Oscar baity type stuff. That I feel like it's nice for them to get something that everybody can enjoy. So I really enjoyed it, and I gave it a C+. And that's not to say it's a bad movie. I just think, you know, it's above average a revenge movie. So what did you think about it, JD?
Well, I'm in very different ballparks than you guys are. I really like this movie quite a bit. As for all the reasons I mentioned earlier, the performances are incredible. Some of the best we've seen of the year. I'm not sure if any of them will be nominated. I actually think some of these will kind of fall through the cracks. But I feel like these are some of the best performances that we'll see this year that no one will probably end up talking about. And I think it's because a lot of people don't feel the same way I do about this movie, which is perfectly fine. A lot of people had issues with the narrative, and they didn't like the simpleness of the story, and thought that they needed more. And to me, I feel like that's what I loved about this movie. I feel like people are always wanting to have, they're always wanting more and more, and they're wanting complication, and they're wanting a lot of drama, and we don't get that here. And I feel like that works. And I love the small, simple aesthetic. I love the realness that this movie gets. And I love what Christian Bale's character does here. It's not a lot. He's really playing it to his character, and just really playing it to the rawness that we get from beginning to end. And I love that. I love that it stays that way. It doesn't change. There's really no hero at the end. It's just as simple as it gets. But for what Bale's character is, and it's hard to really get into it without giving spoilers away, but for what Bale's doing in this movie, for as simple and small as it is, for someone who is just willing to just work to get by and try to do anything he can for his family, to me, Bale is just as heroic here as he is for Bruce Wayne. And I love what he was doing here. And I love that smallness. And if you're willing to dig, there's some really great stuff going on with these characters. And I love that Cooper allows you to assume things. And I love that. And I love what he was doing with that. So for me, I know I'm in the minority for this, but I gave it an A-. I really, really enjoyed it for all of those reasons. So we'll get back to more of these big worlds and people taking over Wall Street. We'll get back to that in a little bit. But for this small little moment in the year, I love what this movie was trying to accomplish. It worked really well anyway, at least for me. But just to, before we move on, just a couple of quick responses that we got from some fans on Twitter and Facebook. And again, most people didn't agree with me. Most people were in the same vein as you, Scott, and you, Drew. But we had at the Talking Can basically said that it wasn't as meaningful or as emotional as he wanted it to be, which makes sense because there really wasn't a whole lot going on there with some of that stuff outside of one little scene. At Movie Revolt, Dan, who's been on the show before, he basically said the narrative was lacking coherency, but the performances were really great. And that's more or less what you guys had kind of touched on earlier as well. The Q Film cast, who is going to be on the show here in a few weeks, basically agreed with me and said that they saw it on Friday, last Friday, that and they thought my review was spot on. They thought it was unapologetically blue collar, small script, but with huge scenes, and that they were very satisfied, which is exactly pretty much where I was.
you know, and one thing I had thought about this as the last day or two went by is that I think this will be a movie where this is one of those movies where most audiences who don't really follow film that much say, you know, how did this just get a 52 on Rotten Tomatoes? These critics, they, you know, they don't know what they're talking about, because I do think that there's a lot here that people will enjoy. You know, I do think it is an enjoyable film, and I do, and I did like it. You know, I just don't, I feel like there's a lot of other movies that, like, sure, maybe A Single Shot. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of movies like that that nobody sees either. So I feel like this is just like a heightened version of that. But I mean, I'd still like it. I don't think it has to be like you either like it or you don't. So, yeah, I like it. It's
and just, that's the kind of stuff that it really kind of boggles my mind with the critics sometimes, because critically, A Single Shot got way better reviews than what this movie did. But in terms of tone and aesthetic, it's very much the same.
Yeah, go ahead.
And the performances are just as good here, if not better. And I loved A Single Shot. And I think I like both of those aesthetics. I think that's why I tend to like both of those films. So to me, it just kind of boggles my mind a little bit.
And one thing I wanted to say about that was, you know, I've read some reviews, and like there's a scene at the end, just a shot at the end, and I won't say what it is until we get into spoilers later. But there had been a lot of talk about, like, why was this shot in there? And, you know, this drove me crazy for the last day. And I when I saw it, I was just like, okay, guys, you're overthinking this. Like, what are you talking? It's just very, you know, if you don't understand what that's supposed to be, I think you're expecting way too much out of this movie. And maybe that's because we get Christian Bale and some of these actors, you know, but
especially for as simple as this movie is, it's not trying to do a whole lot. I mean, the director really wants you to assume some things about these characters, especially about Woody Harrelson's character, you know, and about his stature, about, you know, about where he's at and this whole environment. You know, so, I mean, to really overthink it, you're really doing too much. It's not that complicated. And so, yeah, I feel like a lot of these critics just went way overboard with overthinking it, kind of like what you're saying. So, I mean, it's very simple. It's as simple as it pretty much gets.
And sometimes
really dive
that's good.
It.
So.
Yeah, and for me, and for what they were trying to accomplish, I thought it worked here. Yeah, sometimes you need a little bit more. For me, I thought it worked here. Anyway, be sure to go and check out my full review of this up on the website at incessionfilm.com. If you agree or disagree with our takes, let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/incessionfilm or tweet us at incessionfilm.
Or leave us a comment on our Google Plus page or on Letterboxd. Our usernames are incessionfilm on both of those. And you can also email us at incessionfilm@gmail.com. We'd love to know your thoughts.
All right. The Incession Film Top 3 is next. We're going to be discussing our top 3 revenge movies with a family element in it. And if you mess with my family, Scott, you're messing with me. And I will come after you, Liam Neeson style.
Oh, wow.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Session Film Top 3, as usual, is brought to you by the First Time Watchers podcast, which is a podcast I would highly recommend. And I'm not just saying that because they are the sponsor for our Session Film Top 3. I mean it. These guys and their podcast is really fun. It's really good. It's hosted by Tim, Walter, and Hermano, and it's really good. It's a really fun podcast, as I've touched on this show. What I love about it is that none of them have seen the movie before when they review them. They go in, whether it's old or new or anything in between. If they haven't seen it, they review it on their show. And they have a lot of other fun stuff that you'll want to get into. It's really great. They have some really great banter. You can tell these guys are good friends. They've been on the show before here. They're definitely good friends of ours. So definitely be sure and go and check them out. That is First Time Watchers. You can see more at firsttimewatchers.blogspot.com. You can also just go to iTunes and search them, First Time Watchers. But be sure and go and check them out. I promise you, you will not regret it. You're listening to the Incession Film Podcast. This is episode 42. Now we're going to be going over our top three family revenge movies, meaning that I actually gave you guys a criteria this week. So we were talking about revenge movies, very similar to Out of the Furnace. And the big thing with this revenge story is that it was family related. And I don't want to go into it a whole lot because it'll spoil some things. So that being said, so for our revenge movies, it had to be family related. The revenge plot element had to be along those lines somewhere in there. Outside of that, did you guys have any other criteria to pick your list this week?
Not really.
All right. Now you,
yeah, you said it, man. That's pretty specific. So I had a pretty easy time finding some stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't really have any other criteria either because I figured that was pretty good in itself. So that being said, Drew, what is your number three?
Well, I don't know if you all have this on your list, but I mentioned this during the review, but my number three is Taken, starring Liam Neeson.
Very nice.
Whatever the girl's name is.
If Nate was still on the show, he'd be very proud of you right now.
But, you know, it's just a fun movie all around. I just saw it the other day, so it's really in my mind.
Yeah. And we've touched on it quite a bit. And in fact, it probably would have made this list for Nate. And it almost did for me, but we've had it on a lot of other lists before, so I kind of kept it off. But it's a good honorable mention for sure.
It's great. You know, I remember seeing this twice in the theater, and I don't do that much for these kinds of movies, but I do agree it is one of the better ones.
Absolutely. All right, Scott, what's your number three?
My number three is, to nobody's surprise, the Kill Bill, you know, whole damn bloody thing or whatever they call it. I mean, you know, she thinks that, it's no spoiler, but she thinks that, you know, they've killed her child, her unborn child at the very beginning of the movie. So you get to kind of go through and follow this, woman as she tries to, you know, exact revenge on these people. So, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. Everybody knows Kill Bill, who's probably listening to this. So, you know why I picked it.
Yeah. I kind of figured you were going to have it. I came very, very close to having it on my list, but I figured you would have it. So it was a good honorable mention for me. So yeah, that's a good one.
What's your number three?
For my number three, I am going with an animated film. I'm going with the 1994 Disney classic, The Lion King.
I knew it. That's awesome. So,
I love this movie. You know, Brandy and I did an extra film podcast where we reviewed Frozen last week, and when we were kind of comparing it to other Disney musicals and classic movies, this is right up there for me. This is probably my number one when it comes to that kind of stuff. I love this movie. I don't know if I really need to go into it a whole lot because there's a lot of great elements here that everyone pretty much knows. But obviously there's a revenge element here that as a little kid, I feel like it's pretty dark. It's pretty dramatic and it's very heartbreaking, but I love how it plays out. It's very fun. It's a great movie. So yeah, 1994, The Lion King, that is my number three. All right, Drew, what is your number two?
My number two is another Tarantino movie, is Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, very nice.
2009, with the revenge subplot with Diane Kruger's character.
Sure.
I mean, this is an amazing movie. Like, anyone who's a film fan, if they haven't seen it yet, I don't know what are you doing with your time?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very good. I actually had this conversation on Twitter. I can't remember who it was with, but I saw a tweet where someone was basically saying like, oh, it's on HBO again, or it was on TV or something. Like, I'll get to it at some point. I don't know why I keep putting it off. And I said, go watch it. It's good. I promise you. You will thank me later.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very good. All right, Scott, what is your number two?
My number two, and you guys have had some nice picks, by the way, so I'm impressed. My number two, I had to go with one of the all-time favorites or generic movies that of this type, but it was The Godfather Part II. And I won't spoil any of the narrative, but as you know, this is the classic Marlon Brando, Al Pacino movie. I mean, everybody knows it.
Yeah.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah.
I don't think there's really need to talk about much other than, you know, if you want to think about a family in a movie, there's not much other than the Corleones that you can think of sometimes. So Godfather Part II is my number two. What about you, JD? What was your number two?
That is a great choice, by the way. And again, like Kill Bill, very, very close to making my top three. But I ended up just going with a good honorable mention, but it was very, very close. For my number two, I went with a movie that I haven't I watched this for the first time not that long ago and really, really loved it. And I think I went with it mostly because of the kind of turn it takes isn't necessarily too surprising. I think the big reason I wanted to pick it is because it's a movie that I didn't expect to love as much as I did, and that is the movie Once Upon a Time in the West, which is directed by Sergio Leone, and it's very, very good. It's very slow moving, though. It's kind of long, but I love how it kind of draws a lot of that out, though. Like, you're kind of wondering who this main character is for a long time, and they don't really go into it a whole lot until kind of really some of the last scenes of the movie. You kind of find out why he's going after these people and what's going on. And so I can't really go into it because I don't want to spoil it, but I thought it was done extremely well. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of Westerns, but I really fell in love with this movie, and I had a really good time with it, and I loved the cinematography. I thought it was really good. For some reason, I was just really engaged with this movie the whole time and just really wanting to know what the heck is this character or what's he doing all this stuff for. So I thought they played it really geniusly. I thought it was very, very good, which is why I had to go with it as my number
two. Yeah, nice choice.
All right, Drew, what is your number one?
My number one is Christopher Nolan's Memento.
Find anything? Didn't think so. Let's go, huh? Oh,
you're gonna pay for what you did. Beg forgiveness, and then you pay.
Let it. You're a clue, you freak.
Beg my wife's forgiveness before I blow your brains out.
Nice.
This is a movie. I love this movie. I love what it does with the revenge genre, you know, and just does more with it than you'd expect.
Sure.
The general revenge movie. Have you all seen this movie before?
I assume.
This is a great movie.
Oh yeah. If anybody listening hasn't seen it, it's a movie where it basically goes in reverse. Just a very strange way of formatting a movie, and it's amazing.
And it doesn't get enough. It doesn't get enough praise now because we've had this Dark Knight trilogy and all that. But Memento, to me, is still Nolan's best movie. So I really love it. I agree.
Yeah, and I've heard that from a lot of other people. I don't think you're I don't think you're alone in that, Scott. So yeah, it's definitely a good movie for a lot of reasons. So that's a great choice. Love to hear it. All right, what is your number one, Scott?
Well, for my number one, I was going to go with The Searchers, which is a John Ford, John Wayne movie that I've talked about here before, and it's certainly one of the more, you know, beloved movies in history. But I decided to champion a small movie, which probably not many people have seen, and that I believe is worth seeing. So I picked I Saw the Devil, which is a South Korean thriller. You know, it's by the director Kim Ji-woon, who actually made his American debut this year with The Last Stand way back in January. Schwarzenegger and, you know, all that.
Sure.
But to me, this Korean movie is my favorite one, even over Old Boy. And I feel like not enough people see this one. So I'm hoping that some people watch this. It's just basically about a lady who gets murdered very brutally in the beginning of the movie, and her fiance happens to be like a CIA agent or whatnot, you know.
Sure.
He's like a
sure.
high police officer, so he goes after this killer, and similar to what we just saw in Out of the Furnace, you know, it does look at revenge in a way that you know, makes you question sometimes how far you can take it and how far you should take it. So,
yeah,
you know, it's really violent and it's really well acted. But I Saw the Devil is definitely one of my favorite movies, period. So, yeah, you'll see that if you haven't.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen that one, so that's pretty interesting. And I know, you know, obviously I really loved Old Boy, and I don't think you liked it as much as I did, so I'll be interested to see how this will compare since this is your favorite Korean film. So I'll be interested to see it for sure. Okay, for my number one, I ended up loving it. A lot of people love this movie. This is really not a surprise to a ton of people, I don't think. But I went with the 2000 film, Gladiator.
Why doesn't the hero reveal himself and tell us all your real name? You do have a name.
My name is Gladiator.
How dare you show your back to me? Slave! Will you remove your helmet and tell me your name?
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, general of the Felix Legions, loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius, father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or the next.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to go with this one mainly because there's a few moments in this scene specifically that really speak to me. Specifically, there's this one scene where Russell Crowe's character, Maximus, is talking with Joaquin Phoenix's character, who is kind of like the ringleader of this whole gladiator thing. And basically, he stares him right in the face and basically says, I don't care what I have to do, but I'm going to kill you either in this life or the next one, so you better watch out for me. And I kind of wanted to say that line kind of like Samuel L. Jackson and swear, but I don't want to bleep it out later. So, but it was awesome, and I loved it. And I loved it with Hans Zimmer's score in the background. I thought it was really cool. So, yeah, that moment for me just really captured why I love this movie. It's just so super badass, and I love everything about it. And it has some really nice emotional beats, as much action as it has, which is really great. And I love the story and the narrative with it, but there's some really good emotional ties to this movie, at least for me personally, that I really like. So it kind of came full circle in a lot of different ways. So yeah, I really love this movie for a lot of different reasons, which is why it was my number one.
Yeah, that's a great pick, man. I need to revisit that one soon.
Yeah, I probably should watch it again soon. I listen to the score all the time, but I haven't seen the actual film in a while. But yeah, did you guys have any honorable mentions this week?
I think a couple of mine were Godfather and Django Unchained.
Okay. Very nice.
Yeah, I talked about mine, just The Searchers mainly, and you know, like you had your number three was on mine too. I just can't remember what it was right now.
Lion King.
But maybe it was Drew's number three.
Yeah, okay.
Taken.
Yeah, Taken. Yeah, certainly Taken was one of the better recent ones. But I do think that there's a lot of great revenge movies that apparently have to do with family elements. So it's interesting that we named a heck of a lot of good movies there.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I had Kill Bill, as I mentioned earlier, Taken, as I mentioned earlier, and also The Godfather, all that I mentioned earlier. One of the ones that I hadn't talked about was True Grit, which I loved the 52 version, and I also loved the 2006 version even better. So that was another one that I wanted to mention on there as well.
So I was just thinking that would have been a good discussion about the remakes last week, because I totally forgot that. It totally slipped my mind.
Oh, yeah.
But those both were so damn good.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let us know how your picks stack up against ours. Email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com or leave us a comment on Facebook or Twitter or on our website at insessionfilm.com.
Okay, just want to talk about the poll question that we had on the website this last week, where we asked, which December movie are you looking forward to the most? And the responses we had was Out of the Furnace, The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, American Hustle, Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, Saving Mr. Banks, Inside Llewyn Davis, The Wolf of Wall Street, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, or Other, which you could just type in Other.
Which, I mean, clearly you forgot Tyler Perry's A Madea Christmas. That's clearly going to be the winner.
That would have been the winner.
We had to leave that one off. We knew it would get all the votes. So.
You were double tied.
Yeah, we knew that one would win. We don't want to compare that to these other ones. So leaving off the eventual Oscar winner, which is obviously going to be that one, with the poll question, which this is what we're going to get into in our next segment. But for the sake of the poll, The Hobbit won with 30% of the vote. That kind of surprised me a little bit, but kind of doesn't at the same time. Inside Llewyn Davis had 20% of the vote, and The Wolf of Wall Street at 15% of the vote. Secret Life of Walter Mitty, not quite so much. Saving Mr. Bank, not quite so much either. So, and Anchorman 2 didn't really hardly get any votes, which was a little surprising to me that no one's looking forward to that movie at all. So
it's interesting, you know. It's been so long since that first one that I'm anxious to see how it does because it has been a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as much marketing as that movie – well, I don't want to get into it because we'll talk about it in the next segment.
Yeah, for sure.
So we'll just leave it at that. Thanks for everyone that voted on the poll. We really, really appreciate it. All those votes really do matter a lot, so we thank you for that. And also just want to say a quick thank you to those that are supporting the show. If you want to support us, just go to our website at InsessionFilm.com. Just click on that premium tab on our main menu all the way to the right, and you can buy all of our bonus content there for just a small donation of 99 cents. And we appreciate those that are supporting us.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to say thanks to one of our listeners, Callum. He gave us a nice donation this week, and I appreciate that. Really appreciate his support and
absolutely. Thank you for
stuff.
That. Yeah, absolutely.
So next up, we'll be discussing our December preview. It could be a huge month for movies, so we'll break it all down next.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 42. And now we are going to discuss a little bit of a December preview, which should be a lot of fun. And I did a whole new article on the website. This is a series that we kind of did before when Nate was on the show. And it's something I think I'm going to pick up because I really enjoy doing it. And so we did a little bit of a December preview on the website. Now we're just going to kind of talk about it. So I guess let's get into it, fellas. Obviously, starting off this last weekend was Out of the Furnace, which we just discussed. But coming up next weekend, which is the movie that we are going to review, is the sequel to The Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug, which, again, as I said, won our movie poll last week on the website, which was a little bit surprising to me because I feel like The Hobbit was decent, but I feel like it was a big downer comparatively to the original Lord of the Rings. And I'm kind of interested to see how people are going to respond to the sequel, which I've heard that is definitely better than the first one. But what do you guys think about this? Is this something you're excited to see?
Yep, a little bit. I wasn't really too big on the first one, but I'm eager to see it.
Sure.
Yeah, this one, I mean... This is kind of the reason that I think that they make remakes anyway in my mind or they continue series because I was a huge fan of Lord of the Rings and I honestly never cared about the Oscars until Lord of the Rings started getting nominated and I was kind of fanboying out back then in 2002 sure. or 3, wanted to win and finally Return of the King won and I was like, you know, maybe the Oscars are all right. But
sometimes they get it right, sometimes.
Yeah, I definitely agree that the first Hobbit movie was not that great, but I do think there's something magical about seeing these characters, especially like Gandalf and and some of these Orlando Bloom's character coming back, Legolas, sure. this year. So, even though I don't think it's going to be as good as the Lord of the Rings films, I'm really excited for it.
Yeah,
what about you, JD?
You took the words right out of my mouth, Scott. The first film doesn't quite. It just didn't live up to the original Lord of the Rings, which it didn't necessarily have to. I just felt like it just didn't have the inspiration or depth that the original trilogy gave us, and it was so heavy in CGI that I just had a hard time.
This one
really
looks like it too. So
it does. So I'm a little bit at an arm's length, but like you said, I'm excited that we get Legolas back. I'm also excited to see the dragon voiced by Cumberbatch, which should be a lot of fun. So,
You did in the first one. You did have those. There were a couple moments in the first Hobbit where you almost felt that magic from Lord.
Yeah,
of the Rings.
Absolutely. So
and you kind of get it at times.
Sure. Yeah, so it'll be exciting to kind of see what happens.
I hope this one's better.
Yeah, me too. And I have read some things where it definitely is. So we'll see. We don't really want to get into this a whole lot because we don't have time. But also, that comes out next weekend is Paul Walker's new movie Hours that is coming out. It's actually out on VOD right now, I believe. So you can watch it, but it does come out next weekend as well.
I'd rather go see that. I'd much rather stay home and see that than the Madea Christmas.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So, but you know, Paul Walker does look good in it. I mean, from the trailer. So I think it definitely is one that'll be worth checking out. Who knows? Maybe we'll do an extra film on it sometime soon if we get a chance. But we got to move on because we got a lot of stuff to talk about. So coming out December 18th, American Hustle, David O. Russell. This just won Best Picture at the New York Film Critics Circle, which was a little bit of a surprise for some anyway. But, you know, given this cast, I like a Russell. What do you guys think? Is this maybe something? Is it Best Picture quality?
Yeah, it seems best Picture quality. Seems it's clearly not Silver Linings Playbook. Yeah, it's very different from that. But it looks like it has some real good quality to it. So I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, and I think the thing about the New York Film Critics thing, I'm not surprised at all, because if you think about it, it kind of seems like in the vein of Goodfellas or something like that, you know, one of these New York kind of character, you know, studies or portrayals or whatnot. So I do think that had something to do with it. Those New Yorkers kind of love to see those caricatures put on film. But I think, like you said, David O. Russell knows what he's doing with these people. We've already had movies with several of these people in them, you know. And, I mean, I think he knows how to make Jennifer Lawrence especially look really, really sexy. You know, he knows how to make her look good. So I'm always anxious to see her in those movies.
I know. Let's take your two best performances from your one movie and the two best from your other movie, and let's put them into a movie by themselves.
Exactly.
So that should be a lot of fun. So I love David O. Russell. I think this should be really good. I've heard from a lot of people it's better than Silver Linings, which is a movie that I personally liked quite a bit. I'm really excited. I can't wait to see this. Now, will it live up to, you know, the New York people as far as Best Picture? Who knows? We'll see. But
I do think it'll be fun.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited for it. Also coming out that weekend, as we were sort of touching on in the earlier segment, Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues. Is this going to live up to the first movie?
Probably not. Let's be honest. Sequels that come out like so far after the original usually don't work out so well. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think so.
No. I agree with you, Drew. I think that the Anchorman kind of thing has had its time, and I think that Will Ferrell's kind of running out of options as far as what he can do now, and this kind of shows that he's trying to reach back to what he was best at. But I do think it has potential in that all the old guys are back, but I don't know. We'll see. I'm anxious to see what it's like for sure. What about you, JD? Did you like the first one?
I loved the first one. I really liked it. My big question with this one is, now, is all the marketing they're doing because they know that it won't live up to the first one and they still want people to go and see it? Or is it that they just love playing these characters, which I wouldn't doubt if that was the case too. So that's the question. I don't know. It's being heavily, heavily marketed, and Will Ferrell is doing Ron Burgundy everywhere. News channels, like real news channels, Sports Center, he's everywhere. Promoting this movie, and so as the character, And obviously all the commercials we've seen too with like Dodge Durango and all that stuff going on. So because it's being so heavily marketed, I don't know if it's because the quality is less or if they just have fun with it. I don't know. And I think that's the big question for me that is like, oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it kind of keeps me at an arm's length.
Yeah, and just to give you an idea of how long this has been, it has been 9 years and 5 months since Anchorman came out.
Yeah.
So almost a decade went by.
That's,
you know?
That's Richard Linklater-esque.
Yes, it is.
Wow. So,
maybe
I don't
the Anchorman trilogy. Not for you.
Yeah, 9 years later, we'll get another one. But, yeah, it should be interesting to see nonetheless. Okay, moving on to December 20th. Have some good movies coming out toward the end of December. All right, well, on December 20th, we have Saving Mr. Banks. This is Tom Hanks and Emma Thompson with the Walt Disney movie. Is this going to be something that is worth noting in December?
I think so. I've heard good things about it so far. It's basically Disney mainstream, you know, pretty schmaltzy, but
sure,
it seems to be pretty good from what I've heard.
Yeah, and as I said earlier this year, I don't know if you remember, JD, but, you know, Mary Poppins, not a favorite of mine. She treated me horribly when I was at a Disney thing when I was a kid.
I remember you saying that. Yeah.
I can't hold that against Tom Hanks or any of these folks, but I just don't care about this movie. I feel like we've already seen Tom Hanks and Captain Phillips. I really don't care, but I know that it's getting so much praise, so I will.
Sure.
I'll be anxious to see it. I could care less at this point.
I don't know if you've seen any interviews with her, with Julie Andrews, outside of Mary Poppins, but I've seen some interviews like where she was like on the Colbert Report and some other things, and she likes to cuss a lot. Like, and when she's not in character, she's got a mouth on her, at least in some of these interviews. And I don't know if she was playing that off or trying. I don't know. I don't know if that's how she is in real life. It was just funny seeing her in that context, though. But she definitely seemed like, oh, man, she's kind of mean. But I don't know. She could have been doing that for fun or in entertainment. I don't know. But it was kind of interesting.
Truth to that.
Yeah, there could be. But anyway, I think this movie should be kind of interesting. I'm not hugely excited for it, but I think it's definitely one worth noting and worth seeing. I don't think Tom Hanks will be able to live up anything close to his performance in Captain Phillips. To me, this kind of looks like some of the performances he's had over the last, you know, 7 or 8 years or so. That's not bad. It's just kind of cheesy and fun, but nothing, you know, outstanding or anything like that. So I don't know. It should be interesting. We'll probably go see it anyway, but
I sort of, it's just a note on Julie Andrews. I can't believe that she got the Academy Award for Best Actress for Mary Poppins. I can't believe that, but it did happen.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah. I'm not sure what she went up against. I think I had a better experience with Mary Poppins than you did.
But maybe I'm just, anyway.
Yeah. Also coming out that weekend, we won't go into this as well, but Walking with Dinosaurs also comes out that weekend. Not sure if I'll go see that. It's definitely not on the priority list for me, but we'll see. I'm more excited for the other movie that comes out, and that is Inside Llewyn Davis. That is the Coen Brothers picture with Oscar Isaac. I've heard nothing but amazing, awesome things about this one. What do you guys think about Inside Llewyn Davis?
I actually saw this the other day. And it is amazing.
Nice.
It is sitting very comfortably on my top five.
Wow.
Very, very comfortable.
Now, did the music live up to what you thought or what I thought it was going to be? Yeah.
Nice. Fairly well. It's probably been in my head for the past week. So.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but awesome things. So now I'm super excited. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Any other thoughts, Scott?
Just that, you know, it's not a pornographic film, even though it's called Inside Llewyn Davis, for those wondering. But, you know, like you said, I'm jealous, Drew. You got to see this. I know it has to be good. I love Oscar Isaac and Carey Mulligan. You know, I love them in Drive, so I'm anxious to see them hook back up here. And put John Goodman with the Coens, man. That's just a lot of potential. So.
Yeah, really looking forward to it as well. Yeah. Should be really, really good. Okay, moving on to Christmas Day, there is a lot here, so we'll just kind of breeze through some of these really fast. The first one we'll talk about is August Osage County, which has a million actors in it, including Meryl Streep, Julia Roberts, everyone from Hollywood is in this movie. What do you guys think about this one?
It looks pretty good. I've heard interesting things about it. Heard Meryl Streep's really good. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Pretty tabloid, but
yeah, I mean, you know, I agree. I think it is clearly Oscar baity, but you know, anytime you have Meryl Streep in it, it's going to be Oscar baity. So I do think that, you know, Julia Roberts' interaction with Meryl Streep could be kind of cool. You know, yeah. I like those two stars. And Ewan McGregor is somebody that I think doesn't get enough credit. So I'm anxious to see this movie. What about you, JD? Are you looking forward to this one?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm looking forward to just seeing how all of these actors interact with each other and kind of where the story goes. I mean, it seems pretty simple from the trailers, but it just really looks like a bunch of actors getting to play these characters as this huge family that just kind of get to interact with each other during a really tough time is basically what it looks like. So, you know, it kind of looks like Meryl Streep's character is just kind of this, you know, woman that's just really dysfunctional. And that to me looks like a fun element and kind of sounds like my family. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to just seeing the dynamics between all of them. I think that should be kind of fun. Even if it is a little Oscar baity, I think it could be kind of fun anyway.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay, moving on to the next one. We are talking The Wolf of Wall Street. We are taking over Wall Street once again. What do you guys think about this one?
Yeah, this is the a big Mac Daddy one for the season. Just, you know, Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio,
yeah,
Jonah Hill. And not to mention Matthew McConaughey. It all looks looks really good.
I mean, you know, The Departed is one of my favorite films of this century so far. So, of course, I'm going to be really heavily biased towards liking this one. I can't imagine not liking this one. Everything looks great. I mean, especially after seeing DiCaprio as Gatsby, it's kind of cool to see him kind of as Gatsby again, but in a modern day, more modern day film. So, I mean, I'm really anxious. I love Scorsese. And, you know, he's been saying he's not going to do too many more. So this might be the last time we see these guys work together. So, it's going to be exciting to see. What about you? Are you looking forward to it? Or
This movie has had some, at least for me personally, has had some of the best marketing of the whole year. I've loved these trailers. I think they're absolutely fantastic. They look like a lot of fun. And like you guys mentioned, all of these actors in it, you know, DiCaprio and Jonah Hill, who looks like this may be his best performance since Moneyball for sure. You know, McConaughey has turned his career around like nothing else. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to see how all of this kind of plays together. You know, Scorsese is awesome. I mean, you guys said it all. I don't really need to repeat it, I guess, a ton. I look forward to it. To me, this is maybe inside Llewyn Davis, but this is the one I've been looking forward to the most for a little while now. So.
And just to mention, you know, you speak of McConaughey, the range of characters he's played in the films that have been released this year, I mean, it's hard to beat, you know? He's having a heck of a year.
Yeah, he is. It's pretty nuts, absolutely. One of the last ones I want to talk about just real fast, we don't have to touch on this a whole lot, but the big budget Keanu Reeves movie, 47 Ronin. What do you guys think about this? Is this interesting to you at all?
This one has been delayed so many times, and I've heard it's just been a really troubled production.
Yeah.
That I don't know. I hope for the best, but I expect the worst.
This story has so much potential. You know, it's like a true legend of, you know, Japanese history or whatever. But, man, they say it's not even going over well when they've been showing it in Japan here lately. So I'm really thinking it might be a piece of crap, but we'll see. I definitely feel bad for Keanu Reeves that he can't seem to just turn the corner anymore. But we'll see, I guess. It does have Rinko Kikuchi, who is in the Wolverine movie this year that I liked. So maybe you know, we'll see her in another big role. But what about you, JD? You think this will be good? Or
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure the studios have already fired the director on this one. So that doesn't show good signs. So the fact that that's happened means that I'm not looking forward to it. Plus, how many times have we talked about Keanu Reeves saving the world?
I mean, am wrong about Wolverine, by the way. It's Pacific Rim that she was in. She was the was wrong. Sorry about that.
Which I liked that movie too. I'm not looking forward to this one at all. Of all the, I will go see Grudge Match probably before this movie. So I'm not really looking forward to this one at all. I'll let other people see it, and if they say it's good and that all the production issues they fix, then yeah, I'll go see it. But when you have The Wolf of Wall Street and August Osage County and The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which we'll talk about next, I'll go see those before this one, hands down. So speaking of, the last one to talk about for the month of December, Christmas Day, Secret Life of Walter Mitty. What do you guys think?
Well, it looks like it's going to fly under the radar just from, you know, not popular it is at this point. But it looks like it could have that same kind of, Life of Pi whimsy to it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I like Life of Pi, so I'm ready for anything similar to that.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, here's the thing. I would normally say that it would go under the radar, but on a week where you get a rated R movie as your main movie, which is Wolf of Wall Street, this is a PG movie, you know, and it's a wide release. So I feel like, you know, the kids can go to this one. And I'm not sure if there's any, you know, we had the Dinosaurs movie the week before, but this may be something that, you know, kids end up going to with their parents. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I feel like it could do some box office damage. Now, whether it's good or not, that's another thing. But I do think it could be successful.
That is a really great point. I think that's one of the bigger things that this movie has going for it, at least in terms of box office. Now, when it comes to award stuff, that could be a different story, kind of like what you were just kind of touching on. But as far as the box office stuff goes, I mean, it's really this or Grudge Match if you're going to take your kids anyway. You're probably not going to take them to go see The Wolf of Wall Street. You know,
you're a bad parent. Yeah. Let me just say that.
You're probably not going to take them to go see August Osage County. I mean, you could, but I mean, that doesn't look very appealing for kids. And I don't know how 47 Ronin really appeals to kids either. So, I think that definitely has a going for it. I know to me, I think it looks interesting. I've really liked the marketing for this movie. The music's been great. I mean, everything about it seems interesting to me. I'm definitely excited to see it. I'm really curious to see the implications it'll have on awards, but I mean, I think this is one of Stiller's best projects. I'm hoping for it anyway. You know, we'll see. Anyway, that is all we have for the month of December.
But there is one more, though.
Am I missing one?
Yeah, just one, and it probably just got added in the last few days. It's the Mandela movie, you know?
Oh, okay,
expansion.
Yeah.
So I was thinking while you were talking about that, it kind of slipped my mind, but that Mandela Long Walk to Freedom is PG-13, and, you know, with him just passing away,
that could be a big one, doing
a bunch of damage too, so I don't know.
And that one looks really good too. That's
Idris Elba.
He looks fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What do you think about Idris Elba, Drew? Do you like him?
I like Idris Elba. Have you all ever seen Luther?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
He's really good in that.
Yeah, if anybody hadn't watched Luther, you should check that out for sure.
Absolutely. Before we move on, I just want to say thanks to some of the fan responses we got this last week. We had a lot of tweets. We even had a few emails that came in that we really appreciate. We had a lot of tweets from Allison Jones, who started listening to the podcast this last week. She said she was really glad that she found it. On Twitter, at The Art of Steel, sent us some really great responses to our podcast as well, and they really enjoyed listening to the show, so we really appreciate that. And we also heard from Ben Taylorson, who has his own podcast out there, and sent us a really great email and really started listening to our podcast, and they are actually going to be on our show probably in the next month or so. So we really look forward to that. And thanks to everyone who's been tweeting and emailing us back and forth. We really, really appreciate all of the feedback. It truly, truly helps us out in some really tremendous ways. Okay, well, let's finish out the show real quick with some movie news and films we got to see over the last week. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 42. And before we get into the films we saw over the last week, let's talk about some of the news that came out this week. And so last week, one of the bigger things was the Amazing Spider-Man 2 trailer came out. What did you guys think about the new trailer?
I did not see it because it's a little thing I have. I try not to watch trailers, but I can avoid it, you know?
Sure.
So I didn't catch it. What do you all think?
Well, I'm kind of like you a little bit, Drew, that I try to avoid trailers if necessary. I would usually watch the first trailer, but for some movies, but I won't necessarily go past that if I can absolutely help it. I even try to get to the theaters late on purpose if I get a chance to, because I don't want to watch a trailer too many times. And I don't do that for all movies, but obviously for the sake of the podcast, there's some trailers that are worth talking about, like this one. I didn't really care for this trailer a whole lot. It seems very heavy in the CGI, kind of like what The Hobbit did. I didn't really care for how that was done. It almost looks very video game-ish, so I really wasn't impressed with a ton of that. And they're introducing a lot of bad guys. And from the trailer, it looks like the main bad guy isn't the one they've been promoting a lot over the last several months. So I'm kind of curious to see how that's going to play out. Some of the new characters look interesting, but I'm not sure the kind of depth we'll get from them. Although they are leading up to, I don't want to spoil anything, but they're kind of leading up to something within the Amazing Spider-Man universe that I think is pretty cool. I just don't know if it'll be done very well, given the kind of stuff that they're having to deal with. So I don't know. I was not hugely impressed. If I was going to grade the trailer, I'd probably give it a C+. I'll definitely go see it. I actually did enjoy the first one, but this looks very video game-ish, very cartoonish, and there's too much going on, I feel like, for them to get in 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, just basically what you said, you know, it looks very video game-y, very CGI-ish. I will say it did look more action-y than the first one. The first one was really disappointing for me. I really was let down by it, and I frankly wish they would just let this be in the Marvel Universe and let go of it. I wish Sony would just let it go. But, I see that they're, you know, trying to capitalize on Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone as a real-life couple. So I guess, there's enough there to draw people to it. I just don't feel like it'll be any better than the last one. Hopefully the music is better, because, man, it was so awful in the last one. Like the soundtrack, you know? Oh.
Yeah, I would agree. I didn't really care for the music in the first one either. That was probably the thing I disliked about the first one. It sounds like, though, I liked the movie overall better than you. Are you familiar with this universe versus the Sam Raimi Spider-Man universe?
Yeah, and I love the first, I love the Sam Raimi stuff. So maybe I just feel like they did this all too fast, and they were just trying to keep the rights to it, and they just kind of threw it together, you know. But I don't know. I'm not
possibly
much into this.
I mean, they're. I guess what I liked about this Spider-Man universe is that they're going off a different comic book base, so there's differences that I enjoyed, and I think they made the right decision to go to that. I also liked how they introduced Peter Parker's parents. Now they didn't really dive into that a whole lot in the first one, which was a little disappointing, but.
That was a strong point, though. I would agree.
It was, and I still like how they're still playing off of that. And toward the end of the film, I kind of figured they would dive into it in future films, and it looks like they're going to dive into it a little bit further in this one, which I really like. But again, my biggest thing with this one is that if you're going to hit on those beats, and then you're going to hit on all these villains and what's also happening with Peter Parker and Emma Stone's character, like, how are you going to do all of that in 2 minutes and do it well? Yeah. That's the biggest question that I have right now. You know, unless they're going to do the film at like 1.7 speed, like, I don't know how you're going to handle all that in 2 hours. So I don't know. Who knows?
One other thing I just wanted to say that I feel like these, just like Superman, I feel like they're just taking us too seriously. I feel like there's no comedic relief in these movies, you know? I feel like they don't understand what makes the Marvel one so popular. But anyway, that's just my little mini rant.
That's also very true. And I think it just really depends on really what you want to do. you know, and what kind of tone you want to take, what your demographic is. Because, you know, I had a debate with someone earlier this week about, you know, like the TV show Arrow and like the Dark Knight series. Like, I feel like those, the demographics they're going after in those are very different than Marvel, you know, because those are very dark in tone. They're very serious. They're not light at all. And where Marvel is obviously going after kids and teenagers and parents, and they're more playful and a lot more fun while also having the superhero elements. And so, yeah, I agree that for Spider-Man and for a Marvel franchise, that's a little bit different. I guess it just really depends on what you want to do. But this, I mean, if you didn't know, it kind of does feel like it has that DC tone going a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. The next thing we want to talk about is that Indiana Jones, surprise, surprise, is now a Disney property. What are you guys thinking about this? Do you think they're going to reboot Indiana Jones, continue it? And if so, who are they going to get to play Indy if they reboot it?
Raiders of the Lost Ark is probably my all-time favorite movie. And even I don't care if they make another movie. Don't care. Nice. I don't want to go see it. I have no interest in seeing it.
Sure.
You kind of burnt me out. You know, you've overstayed your welcome a little bit. You got Harrison Ford, who's about 1,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either you're just going to get somebody to replace him, or you're going to get Harrison Ford to play him. And I'm not really interested in either of those possibilities.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you, Drew. I feel like maybe this has played out, and I don't know why Harrison Ford insists on. I don't know if he's going to be in it or not. I don't know what Disney's planning on doing with it, but I don't know that there's not as big of a universe like Star Wars or Marvel or something like that around this. This basically, this whole franchise, you know, it was on the shoulders of Harrison Ford, and I feel like without him, you know, I don't know what it'll be with him. I think he's too old, so I don't know that there's anywhere to go with this for me anyway. What about you, JD?
Well, I know Harrison Ford has been wanting to do another one.
Of course.
They've been kind of going back and forth on this for a really long time. You know, kind of like what you were saying, Drew, like, what are you going to do? Like, the guy's like a million years old right now, and there's not much that they can do. Now, I would be curious to see if they're going to reboot it versus, you know, continuing the story and how they were trying to do that one. I kind of feel like maybe they were throwing in Shia LaBeouf's character in the last one to kind of continue the story, maybe with him. Obviously, that didn't work out very well. You know, are they going to reboot it? I feel like if you're going to reboot it, I think you're in good hands with Disney. They tend to do things pretty well. So I'd be okay with that. It might make Harrison Ford mad, but I'm okay with that too. He seems like he's pissed off all the time anyway. Yeah. So who knows? I mean, I think it'd be fine. I'd actually love to see them reboot it. They don't necessarily have to do the same films over. I would like to see them kind of do something different and more fun in the way that Disney likes to do things. I'd be okay with that, actually.
I heard that you know, Disney was trying to get Harrison Ford back for Star Wars for Han Solo. And right. Harrison Ford told him, you know, I don't really want to do that unless we get some Harrison Ford, unless we get some Indiana Jones going.
Yeah, and that's a really great point. And that's actually perhaps maybe one of the reasons Disney's buying it, maybe to do that and get that process going. Because that was really the ultimatum he gave. He said, if you guys do any 5, I'm on board to do more Star Wars. Even though he seems like he hates Star Wars at this point, so it kind of doesn't make sense to me. But I know he loves the indie franchise, and I think he's willing to sacrifice the Star Wars stuff and to go ahead and do it if he can do indie. Maybe that's where they're going. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
All right, let's move into films we got to see over the last week. Drew, what did you see this week?
As I mentioned before, I don't have any internet in my apartment, so I've been watching DVDs and Blu-rays. And so I saw 3 from this year. World War Z, This Is the End, and your favorite movie, JD, Pacific Rim.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Man, he sells good movies.
I liked it, yeah.
So you love yourself some Pacific Rim. I'm against Pacific Rim, by the way, first. I saw this when it came out, and, you know, I liked it a little bit. I wasn't crazy about it. Not as high on it as you were or some other
Sure, movie, sure. Maybe. Yeah.
But, you know, I enjoyed it. So watch it now just to see how I feel about it after some time has passed, hype has died down.
Sure.
And, you know, I still largely enjoyed it. I don't want to I don't want to reopen the whole originality argument that you got into with Nate.
Yeah, it was pretty, you know, it's pretty lengthy.
I'm gonna avoid that. I'm just going to say one thing.
Yeah.
This is very much an anime-inspired film, you know?
Yeah,
there's a lot of that in there. You know, giant robots fighting giant monsters, be it alien or whatnot. You know, that's all over anime movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it, though. I thought it was great. Now, what my biggest question going forward is how they're going to do a sequel, which apparently they're working on, but I'm... How you continue that story with the way it ends is beyond me, but I'm for it. Well, however they figure it out.
More Jaegers. I'm just I want to see all the countries have Jaegers.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm all for it. Yeah. I want more gypsy danger. I'm on board. Absolutely.
Woodworthy, I read the book and I appreciate what they were able to do with it because it could have gone a lot worse. You know?
Oh, sure. I think what's really interesting about that movie was the fact that how do you take that book and put it into a traditional narrative? And there are actually, I like how it goes around the world, sort of like how the book does. To me, that was one of the main elements from the book that I got that I really liked from the movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one too.
Like, I love the book, and it's just this ending, the third act, they just kind of Frankensteined it a little bit. So it's just, it's really fun. I mean, the third act is pretty much a totally different movie from the first two acts. But, it's really entertaining and it's very tense.
Yeah. You know, they cut out a lot of the original ending.
Oh,
it was kind of last minute thing. Yeah.
I heard that original third act was just a disaster.
Yeah. because if you watch, like, Matthew Fox is in the movie for, like, literally 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And so he was cut out of the whole ending. So he literally makes a cameo for no reason.
Exactly. Yeah. I saw that while watching the movie. I was like, is that Jack from Lost?
Me too, man.
Yeah, I was so confused for a minute. Yeah.
Then I was like, he couldn't have been him because he was in it for, like, 3 seconds. So.
Yeah. Literally. Yeah.
What is he doing?
Yeah.
The other one I saw was This Is the End, and it was one of the bigger surprises of the year, and it's just immensely funny with the
it's amazing. It's still my best comedy of the year for me personally.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I loved it. It's hysterical. Absolutely. Yeah.
Multiple watches, I feel like it would hold up just fine too. I feel
I think this was like my third viewing or something.
Yeah. This will be the one that college students are showing in their dorm when they're having people over. A couple of years. You know, it's
let's drink and watch This Is the End.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Is that all you get to see then, Drew?
Well, like I said, I saw Inside Llewyn Davis, but we already talked
about it. Okay. Yeah. All right. What'd you get to see, Scott?
Well, I saw, I did rewatch The Great Gatsby. I did kind of what Drew did and rewatched a movie from earlier this year. This was in my top 10 going into this. I do think I enjoyed it more in the theater just based on the visuals than I did here at home.
Yeah,
although,
me too.
You know, it did look good on Blu-ray. I thought DiCaprio was really good here, and I thought the first two acts of the film are pretty strong. I feel like by the time you get to the end, it's kind of wearing on you. I still like it a lot, but I'm not sure that you know, it's going to end up in my top 10 after a rewatch.
Did you see the music and the score was nominated for some Grammys?
It should be because, you know, one thing Baz Luhrmann's known for is, you know, really working with these artists and bringing them in and showing them a scene.
Yeah.
You know, they redo the song a little bit. So I'd really love Lana Del Rey's song for this. And
she was fantastic.
You know, you got Jay-Z who kind of was the executive producer of the movie. So he had,
it was great.
All good,
I loved the new age music that they kind of made old school at the same time and just fit. I loved it. I love it.
Me too.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that it was really impressive of Luhrmann to, you know, show an old party but kind of get the message across still that, hey, these people are, you know, hip in this day and this is what you would be doing if you were back in the day.
Exactly.
You know? So yeah. It worked.
It was fantastic. Yeah, I agree.
Did you see 1000% agree. Did you see Gatsby, Drew?
I did. I wasn't crazy about it, but it is what it is.
Yeah,
I'm like you though, Scott. Like it's probably bordering my top 10. Maybe after this month, maybe not so much, depending on how these films actually play out, given the hype they have.
Right.
But it's right up there. I loved it, though. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I also got to see, well, some older movies I watched. I watched Little Caesar from 1931, which is really the first gangster movie. You know, this is where Edward G. Robinson got famous, Douglas Fairbanks got famous. This is just basically about a guy who joins a gang because he wants to. He's just like, hey, I feel like I should be in a gang. So he joins a gang, and he starts climbing the ranks, kind of like Scarface in a way. He starts climbing the ranks, and then, you know, you see his life kind of fall apart. And much like all these gangster movies of the old days, you know, the code, the motion picture code wouldn't allow him to, you know, make heroes out of these guys, although they end up kind of being heroes anyway. But this was just a really fascinating look at, you know, what gangster movies were, what they are now, and how much the same they are, really. They haven't changed that much. So I really like that a lot. I would recommend that for sure. Then I saw Touch of Evil, which I'm not sure if you guys have seen, but it's,
no, I haven't.
You know, it's Orson Welles and Charlton Heston, Janet Leigh, of course, from Psycho. But this is, man, by far one of the most underrated films that, I mean, as far as around here, you know, it's a British movie, so maybe it's not as well talked about around here because of that. But, you know, Orson Welles gives what could be one of the better performances in cinema history easily. He's like this cop, you know, he's like a big, huge, fat cop. He's like real, you know, gritty, and I don't know, he's not even that fat, you know, really. The costume they did and the makeup was so good, and for the 50s especially, you just can't believe how good he looks. And I mean, it's just a great movie about, you know, it's film noir, you know, it's murder, kidnapping, corruption, that type of stuff. I mean, Heston was really good here. He does play a Mexican guy, which kind of is weird, but I mean, Janet Leigh couldn't look more gorgeous here. I said, this is a must-see easily. Marlene Dietrich is even in this, which is crazy because she's like a silent star, you know? So, I mean, this kind of brings all cinema history together in one movie. I really feel like it's one of my favorites of all time, and I've just seen it recently for the first time. So,
wow. I might have to check that out this week then.
It is that strong. I promise you won't be disappointed.
All right. I'll watch it this week.
And then the last one I saw was, I told you about this earlier this week, JD. It's definitely not in the same rank as Touch of Evil, but it's called The Final Countdown. It's from 1980.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's with Kirk Douglas and Martin Sheen, Catherine Ross. This is a really unknown film because it really is kind of silly in a lot of ways. But the idea is, this aircraft carrier in like the 80s gets thrown back through time through probably the worst special effects I've ever seen. It gets thrown
that
back.
That premise alone sounds awesome.
Yeah, get this: they where they're thrown back to is the night before Pearl Harbor, and they're like near Pearl Harbor, so they can save Pearl Harbor from happening. You know?
Oh wow. Okay.
So it's one of the more ridiculously cool. You know, it has a lot of elements of like Back to the Future and stuff. I mean, it's terrible special effects. I mean, some of the acting is bad, but it's just an interesting story. But if you like jets, the whole thing takes place on a aircraft carrier. So this is perfect.
So you have F-14 jets then flying up against these
World War II
planes. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Oh, and they really did all that. You know, it's like the government even put money into this. U.S. government paid for all this to be done, you know. So, I mean, it's crazy.
Wow.
I mean, it's if you want to see something silly and fun, yeah, check out The Final Countdown.
Those F-14s can fly at about 700 knots easily. At standstill, and those Japanese Zeros are like 300 miles an hour.
Yeah, I mean,
no chance.
No, one scene in particular, and this doesn't spoil much, is the jet from the now, you know, the F-14 flying by that Japanese thing, and it flies by it so fast that the plane just falls apart. And like, the backdraft off the jet just, you know, destroys it.
I gotta see this now. I gotta see it like
it
right
is
now.
Awesome.
That's but hilarious. Anyway,
that's a question.
Yeah,
The special effects in it—better or worse than Olympus Has Fallen?
It's got to be better.
You know, I hate to say it, but they were worse.
Oh man,
it was horrible.
That's bad. Then, yeah,
it's easily you'll laugh at it the whole time. So,
oh man,
it's a good question though.
That's funny. Yeah, that's awesome. Is that all you got to see then?
That is it, man. What did you get to see this week?
Oh, man. I got back into my movie groove this week, even on a short week since I disappeared from the universe for 4 days when I was in Orlando. But I got to see, help me out, Scott, 1982?
Oh, Koyaanisqatsi, yeah.
Yeah, that movie, which was, I loved. It was really cool. There's no traditional narrative. It's, if you haven't seen it, it's basically just a bunch of montages of video footage or whatever. And with this really cool score in the background, though, the score is awesome. I really, really liked it. You could definitely tell that the director, Godfrey Reggio, he definitely is in love with like space and like aircraft and flying and things like that. Cause there's a lot of different shots of like spacecraft flying in the air. And there's even one where the camera's on back of this. It kind of looks like this old F-14, but it was like some weird version of it. But it was really cool, and it was really neat just kind of seeing all that. But there's also lots of other video footage of like factories and you know, just natural landscapes and things like that. It's really gorgeously shot, and it's really fun. A lot of slow motion, but it's really cool. It's if you like just watching stuff visually, this is definitely one I would highly recommend. It's one that Scott definitely put my way, and I loved it. It was very cool. Glad you recommended it. I loved it.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. I mean, it did, like you said, I had forgotten that, but you know, the slow motion in this, it was like the first film to do that kind of crazy slow motion. And also the really speeding up of stuff, you know, it had a lot of scenes where like it would speed traffic. I mean, a lot of people have copied that since, you know, basically everybody who's ever done it. So,
sure.
I mean, it's so cool. I mean, everybody should see the Kotze trilogy, if not, you know, just for the score alone, Philip Glass is so good. I'm really glad you liked this one.
Yeah. It was fantastic. I would highly recommend it. It was very good. The other one I saw, I won't talk about this very much, but I saw the Will Smith movie, I, Robot, which is one of my guilty pleasures, I guess, for Will Smith. I really liked this movie quite a bit. I think a lot of people was harping on it a little bit too much, but I can understand the criticisms for sure. But I liked it. It's definitely a guilty pleasure. It's very good for me.
It's really good, I think.
I loved it. I loved dynamics between him and the robot, which was played by Alan Tudyk, is really good. And for Alan Tudyk to play a character like this, and we've kind of touched on that, you know, before on the show, where, you know, there's so many different actors that play roles like this that where you never see their face, but they do a fantastic job anyway.
Yeah.
Definitely one of those things. I loved him here. It was very good. I also saw the new Shia LaBeouf movie, Charlie Countryman.
Oh, I want to see that.
It's directed by Frederick Bond. I actually like this movie a lot more than I think the critics did. Now, I can understand some of the criticisms, but it's really beautifully shot. And Shia LaBeouf, man, he gives everything he has in this. He's really, really good. And there's one scene where he's kind of tripping on acid. And I read that in the scene, according to this report anyway, he was actually tripping on acid in the scene to give it to you because he wanted that sense of realism that you have, I guess. But it was really good.
He wants that sense of realism. Sure.
That's what he says anyway. Yeah. Who knows?
That's why he dropped acid. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's probably why he wanted to have real sex for Nymphomaniac,
too. Oh, yeah.
Want that realism.
Yeah.
But he actually is very good. Now, some of the narrative, I can understand where people have some issues with that. It kind of is a little flat in some areas, but it's actually pretty simple. Kind of like when we were talking about Out of the Furnace, there's not really tons and tons of depth on it. And perhaps maybe this is one of those times it probably could have used a little bit more depth, but I thought it was good. And Shia LaBeouf he was great. I actually really liked him in this movie. He was really fantastic.
Yeah. I'll check that out.
Yeah. I would definitely recommend it. And then I also saw Philomena, which is one that hopefully a movie that we get to discuss on our extra film this week. And you also have a review of this up on the website. I loved this movie. I thought it was very, very good, and I cannot wait to talk about it on the extra film segment. And so I'll just kind of leave it at that and do a little cliffhanger with my thoughts there. And then one that I saw with the girl, this was a first time watch, but we watched Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, which I love the score.
Which one is this, by the way?
This is the first one in the trilogy. So she hadn't seen them before. All she knows is they sell pirate stuff down at Disney. So that's all she knows. So we watched it. And I'll say, as much as people hate Johnny Depp for the stuff that he's, you know, people are criticizing for him doing the same stuff over and over again, this is obviously the first time we'd seen him doing this, and he was fantastic at it. And yeah, he was great. Yeah, I liked him in this role.
Before Robert Downey Jr. was Iron Man, and everybody talks about how great Robert Downey Jr. is as he is that character or whatever, I didn't think Johnny Depp, you know, really was that for all these kinds of movies. You know, he is Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it might be a little bit overplayed now, but I mean, especially then, it was fantastic. I kind of wish if he would have mixed it up a little bit instead of doing all these movies with all this makeup and stuff, and he just did Jack Sparrow, I think it would have been fine, and he could have done it as many times as he wanted to. Probably wouldn't have been as big a deal anyway. But anyway, I liked it. Very good stuff. I actually do have one more thing that I watched this week. It was one of those ESPN E60 documentaries that is pretty personal to me. It's pretty emotional and one that I really want to talk about. But because it's kind of lengthy, be sure to check it in the post credits of this show, as I will go into it in a little bit of detail. But to save on time for the main show, I'll just go ahead and save it for that. But it's really great. It's called Miracle at Michigan. And it's definitely one you'll want to check out. But anyway, that's all I got to see this week. Anyway, be sure to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/InSessionFilm. Follow us on Twitter at InSessionFilm or our Google Plus or YouTube. Also, sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can sign up on Facebook by clicking the newsletter tab or on our site at InSessionFilm.com/newsletter.
And all of our reviews are up on our website as well as on Letterboxd. So check us out at letterboxd.com/InSessionFilm. We try to respond to every piece of email we get. So email us at InSessionFilm@gmail.com. And also be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and on Stitcher. And while you're on iTunes, leave us a review. We've got that contest going on right now. So, you know, you could win a couple Blu-rays, a couple DVDs. Absolutely. So get in there and leave us a review. We'd greatly appreciate that, too. Also on our Listen Now page, that can be found at InSessionFilm.com/listen-now. You can find everything that we do, so go check that out.
Absolutely. And also, the In Session Film podcast is supported by the awesome listeners like you. Our premium podcast, as I mentioned, is on our website at InSessionFilm.com. You can also go to InSessionFilm.bandcamp.com to get all of that bonus content. It's just 99 cents, and it goes right back into the show. So thanks for everyone that is doing that. You can also get everything that we do on our mobile app for just a one-time fee of $1.99. You can get that app on the Amazon Market for Android devices and on the Podcast Box app for iOS devices. All of those details are on the website at InSessionFilm.com/apps. And that'll do it for this week's show. Drew, thanks for being on, man. You're fantastic.
It was good to be here.
Where can the people follow you on the internet?
They can follow me on Twitter at MovieBuffHaven, and you can find my work at MovieBuffHaven.com, where I do movie reviews and movie news. And you can also find more of my work at SoundOnSite.org, where I do TV reviews for The Blacklist and Person of Interest. And I just got a new outlet for the MovieBuff.net, where I'm going to do movie reviews.
Awesome.
And he's one of the better Twitter guys that I follow, so make sure you follow him on Twitter. He has some good things to say, and he writes some good articles. Also, I wanted to thank him for being here through all the technical difficulty he had. We appreciated that a lot, man.
Yeah, for sure.
No problem, man.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show, Drew. You're fantastic.
Good to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, be sure to go follow him. And next week on the show, we are going to be doing The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. And Scott, we're going to have Arcturus and Beast from MGCTV on the podcast next week. Man, we get into it with these guys quite a bit, so it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, hopefully we agree on The Hobbit, but if we don't, there will be some interesting stuff either way.
Oh, yeah. I feel like we disagree with these guys a lot more than agree, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're very knowledgeable, so I like that.
Oh, yeah. Like them. Yeah, they're very good. I can't wait to have them on. They're a ton of fun. And their podcast is hysterical. It's one of those that makes me laugh every time.
Definitely.
Yeah, look forward to having them on the show.
Blue's the Warmest Color is coming to finally to Lexington, so I will finally get to see that after a preview in the last 2 months. I think I've done it every month preview we've done. So I've been like, Blue's the Warmest Color, it's coming soon.
We will still talk about that movie.
Yeah, finally.
I know, I cannot wait, absolutely. All right, well, before we get out of here, fellas, any final thoughts on anything?
No, I'm just kind of very excited to get internet tomorrow so I can actually start watching Netflix and Amazon again.
There you go.
Yeah, it drives me crazy when I don't have internet, so I totally feel you there, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Same here, man. Just looking forward to the movies next week. This may be one of the better weeks that I've been looking forward to for a while since we get Hobbit and Blue's the Warmest Color. So
yeah,
really looking forward to it. And this rest of this month's going to be awesome. So yeah.
Yeah, should be really good. I'm really looking forward to next week as well. I'm looking forward to just kind of settling in and finally having a normal week. So
I'm
ready for it. So, but yeah, go see The Hobbit next week, and we'll see you guys next time on the Incession Film Podcast. Good job, guys. All right. Here we go. Ready, go now. 3, 2, 1, go now, go. But the main one that I just kind of wanted to touch on real fast, and I'll spend a few minutes here, is that there is this documentary, this kind of short documentary that's out there. This is actually one of those ESPN 60 documentaries. And I wanted to touch on this for a couple different reasons. One, it's called Miracle at Michigan, and everyone knows I'm a huge Michigan fan. The other big part of this story is the documentary is about a family that I actually know personally.
Wow.
And it centers around this family from Wauseon, Ohio. Wauseon is about 15 minutes from a town called Bryan, Ohio, which is where I ended up growing up once we moved from Michigan. So it was actually a rival high school of ours. And Elliot Mueller, who is the main person that's in the story, he's actually in the same class as my brother. They actually played against each other on the line. So they went head to head all 4 years in high school. So, and they were definitely two of the best in our high school area as far as offensive linemen and defensive linemen go. So it was fun. They got to know each other, had this nice little rivalry between the two of us.
Wow.
Anyway, what happens is, yeah, it was pretty neat. Cool that I got to know them. Anyway, Elliot Mueller and his family are huge Ohio State fans, huge, huge Ohio State fans. But, Elliot Mueller, the guy that played at Wauseon, that was my brother's rival, he ended up getting a scholarship at Michigan. So he takes the scholarship and goes to Michigan. His freshman year at Christmas time, and this is where the story takes a crazy turn, he was in a car with his brother, his mom, his dad, and his high school sweetheart. They were in a crazy, terrible, tragic car accident, killed his father instantly. The car flipped over, spun over a bunch of times, and essentially he was able to get out. His mom was able to get out, but his brother ended up being paralyzed from the waist down, and his high school sweetheart was stuck underneath the vehicle. And he tried to lift the car up to get his girlfriend out, but he tore his rotator cuff in his shoulder, which could have ruined his college career. Thankfully, it didn't. But he tore his shoulder, and so he couldn't do anything, and he literally watched his girlfriend die in his arms.
Oh gosh.
Horrible. Yeah. Horrible accident. And you know, the documentary does a really great job of telling the story. It's incredibly emotional, and it's obviously even more emotional for me being not only a Michigan fan but knowing this family. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But where the story takes a positive turn is that he ends up going to Michigan, Elliot does, and his brother, his name is Brock, he had two choices to learn how to walk again, which the doctors gave him a 1% chance of walking ever again. He could either go to this place out in Utah, or he could go to Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is where the University of Michigan is. And of course, he goes there, huge Ohio State fan. He was actually a grad from Ohio State. But he goes up there, learns, starts to try to walk again, and eventually he gets in with the training staff at the University of Michigan, and they're trying to teach him how to walk again. Anyway, sorry I'm going into this a whole lot, but I really love it. At the end of the documentary, which this was back in like 2010 or 2009, the very first game of the year, Elliot Mueller and his brother lead the team out onto the field, and his brother walks for the first time with the help of crutches, but walks for the first time, leads the team out onto the field. And it was one of the more emotional moments of my life. I actually saw it live. I was in tears. I was a huge mess.
Yeah.
So this whole story to me is it's incredible. I'm not sure how you can watch this, but if you ever get a chance to watch this, it's called Miracle at Michigan. It's incredible. It's very, very, very powerful. It's a very good documentary.
Wouldn't be surprised if you see a movie come out, you know, out of that one day.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. I mean, it's really, really good story, and it's really cool. And so now, and his brother actually went on to get engaged, and one of his goals was to walk down the aisle at his wedding, which he actually got to do. So nice. It's just a really good story. If you ever get a chance to watch it, it's fantastic, and it was worth noting for sure.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I ranted on for a little while.
That's cool. Understandable.